Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. While cancer deaths are falling in the United States, new cases are on the rise, from 1.9 million in 2022 to over 2 million last year, according to the American Cancer Society. Far too many of these cases involve younger people. They include breast, prostate, colorectal, and cervical cancers. A new study from the National Cancer Institute found that Gen Xers, those born between 1965 and 1980, are projected to experience higher cancer rates than baby boomers. Lead author Philip Rosenberg told NPR he was surprised that so many different types of cancer appear to be rising. They include thyroid, kidney, rectal, colon, and leukemia. The findings suggest that based on current trajectories, cancer rates in the United States might remain high for decades. NPR reports that researchers believe early detection, obesity, and sedentary lifestyles might explain some of the rise in cancer rates. Research also points to pollutants, including a class of man-made chemicals known as PFAS or forever chemicals, as possible culprits. And we've done many shows about PFAS. Joining us to talk about the rise in cancer, what can we do to prevent it? What's happening in terms of educating the public? What does the latest science say? Are two guests. Dr. Irvi Shah is a myeloma specialist, hematologist, oncologist, an assistant attending physician at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, a cancer treatment and research institution in Manhattan. Dr. Shah is a cancer survivor who focuses on dietary interventions and dietary guidelines for cancer. Hi, Dr. Shah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for this invitation, Rose. Look forward to the discussion.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Dr. Vinita Raman, an internal and lifestyle medicine physician, a clinic director of the Barnard Medical Center, a certified nutritionist, and a former internal medicine doctor at Kaiser Permanente, where she launched a plant-based weight loss program. Hi, Dr. Raman. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. Happy to be here.
Well, I so appreciate both of you joining us. And I have to say, this is now a very personal issue for me because I just found out that a loved one has cancer. And I've just been going through the experience in the hospital. My loved one has had radiation and chemo. And I've read a lot about cancer. I mean, I have other loved ones who have had it and friends, of course, but now I'm really diving in. And Dr. Shah, I mean, the statistics are so dire. I also want to recognize that you're a cancer survivor. So talking about this as a doctor is also very personal for you.
Yes, very much so. And I think almost everybody either knows somebody who's been affected by cancer or like directly in their family or friends or directly themselves have experienced it. I think it's no longer this rare phenomenon.
And I know there are so many factors, and I'm so glad that there's so much more media attention about these issues, but I do wish that there was more public awareness about this. And it's a hard question. You cannot pinpoint why someone has cancer. But Dr. Shah, when you look at the science, why are cancer rates on the rise?
That's a really great question. You alluded to some of it when you talked about like environmental pollutants like PFAS or microplastics or other pollutants. But I think when we look at the rising trends, I don't think we can attribute all of it to genetics because genetics don't change so fast over time. And this is more environmental or lifestyle related. And one of the common, one of the well-known factors is obesity or excess adiposity or elevated body mass index. And we know that this has really increased over the decades in the US population, but across the globe too. And 13 cancers are clearly linked to obesity. And in that paper you mentioned, the ones that have an increase in the younger populations, most of them are obesity-related cancers such as thyroid, kidney, colon, pancreatic, endometrial.
Mm. Most of them are obesity-related.
Yes. Again, there are multiple factors. We're not saying that all the patients developed it due to that. But when we're talking about an increased risk, Some of it could be explained by obesity. Other things like diabetes too is associated with an increased risk of cancer, which again, we're seeing rise an increase in the population with pre-diabetes or diabetes. About 40% of the U.S. population has pre-diabetes or diabetes, and about 70+% of the population has an elevated body mass index, so either overweight or obese.
Dr.
And then
Rahman,
if we think about nutrition, is the last one.
And nutrition, yes. And we're definitely going to dive into that on today's show. Dr. Rahman, what would you like to add? Why are these numbers going up?
You know, I agree with everything Dr. Shah just said. Obesity, we know, is a well-known risk factor for many types of cancers. And in fact, a research study showed that in the year 2014, overweight and obesity were estimated to have caused 40% of all cancers in the United States. So this is really tying in with the risk factors for obesity, and most likely obesity and cancer share many of the same risk factors. And it may not be that obesity itself is just causing cancer. It may be that the risk factors they have in common are driving up the rates for both of them.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so we know from research that, for example, when we look at thyroid cancer, that's also associated with a higher risk of obesity. And we know that when we look at thyroid cancer incidence, it rises as obesity does. And research has also shown that consuming more fruits and vegetables is associated with a lower risk, whereas consuming more high-fat animal foods is associated with a higher risk. And we know that both of those nutrient profiles are also associated with higher risks of obesity too.
Well, I want to give out the phone number because, as you said, Dr. Shah, this affects all of us. And to think that these numbers are going up and that Gen Xers are projected to experience higher cancer rates than baby boomers is just so disturbing. And again, we're all dealing with this. Like I said, a loved one was just diagnosed with cancer and, you know, he's being treated with radiation and chemo, and it's just so incredibly difficult to watch. Yes. And so if you have any questions or comments, if you've been directly affected by cancer or someone that you love has been affected by cancer, and you have any questions about prevention, about what the latest science says, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. When I was doing research for this show, Dr. Shah, I found you because the hospital where you work, the center, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, actually had a piece about you in July of last year. Why one doctor thinks diet could help control cancer. And in this piece, we learned that you were diagnosed with Hodgkin lymphoma in 2016 during your first year as a hematology oncology fellow. And you said you heard a lot of recommendations from friends and family about what you should and should not eat. But as a doctor, you were training to treat people with cancer. And you said at that point, you really didn't know what diet was best. So can you talk more about that?
Yeah, sure. I think that's very true that in medical school residency and fellowship, there's not a lot of focus around nutrition and research on that. So many doctors, when they finish training and are in practice, they don't know of all the evidence that's there or believe that there isn't as much evidence as there might be. And another factor is that a lot of this evidence is population-based. So a population is surveyed on their dietary patterns and followed for decades. We call this epidemiologic studies, but epidemiologic studies have the challenge of they can be a bit difficult to delineate. Is it due to the diet or is it due to physical activity or other factors sometimes? And then ideally, we want to do interventional trials, and that is very limited currently in the cancer space, partly due to difficulties in running such trials and also funding for it. So there are very few investigators or researchers focused around that area. And that's something that I personally and professionally feel it's very important to be doing and what I focused on now.
Why is there so little funding in this area?
So most trials in cancer and oncology is through drug development, and drug development is funded through pharmaceutical trials. But when we talk about dietary trials, that needs grant level funding. So the investigator has to write a grant, and it goes through peer review through either the National Institute of Health, and the amount of funding towards it, while it's there, it's much more competitive to get and much more work to be put in to be able to do these studies. Another challenge also is that while a drug is more objective, you either take the drug or you don't. When you're trying to do a dietary study, there's a lot of subjectivity, whether the patient's following it 100% or 50% or 60%. And how do you then look at something like a cancer-specific endpoint or look at how it affects the cancer? Because that may take a longer time. So that can make it a bit harder to study.
What did you learn about nutrition in medical school, Dr. Shah?
Very basic things about what is protein, carbohydrates, what foods have these components. So very basic understanding, but not overall on like, and maybe basic guidelines, but really not into the details of all these trials and research that's available for it and how do we come to these guidelines.
What about you, Dr. Rahman? What did you learn about nutrition in school, medical school?
You know, my nutrition education was limited to complex biochemistry, the structure of carbohydrates, the various types of fat, the different amino acids, which is important, but it's not helpful in real life when I'm trying to select a healthy meal for myself or even trying to counsel my patients on what to select. So it's a lot of biochemistry, but not a lot of practical knowledge.
I was surprised when my loved one was diagnosed with cancer that none of his doctors asked him what he eats or talked at all about nutrition. Dr. Rahman, how common is that? And why is that the case, given that there's so much science out there now about nutrition and not only cancer, but name the cardiovascular disease? There's just so much new science out about the importance of nutrition.
Yeah. You know, first of all, Rose, I'm really sorry to hear about your loved one dealing with it and can imagine how hard it is for you. Sorry you're going through that.
Thank you.
To answer your question, first of all, there is a lot of knowledge about the pivotal role nutrition plays in not only preventing many chronic conditions, but reversing them. And you talked about cardiovascular conditions, and we have so much research data supporting that. And, you know, Dr. Shah was talking about different types of studies. There are epidemiological studies, which don't always prove cause and effect, but show an association. And then there are interventional studies that where there's an active intervention and they prove cause and effect. And we have interventional studies for cardiometabolic conditions. For example, a study that came out of New Zealand called the Broad Study showed that in this study, the research team randomized people in the community to either follow a low-fat plant-based diet or continue their usual diet. And what they found at the end of the 12-month period is that the plant-based group lost 25 pounds on average. Their A1C, which is a marker of their blood sugar control, went down by half a percentage point, and their total cholesterol level decreased by 19 points. These are really remarkable improvements. These are the kinds we see with medications. And yet here we're seeing this just with dietary changes alone. And we know Dr. Dean Ornish did the Lifestyle Heart Trial where participants who followed a low-fat vegetarian diet, sensible exercise, stress reduction, their cholesterol levels went down 24 37%. Their lousy cholesterol, the LDL cholesterol, went down 37%. They lost 22 pounds. And most importantly, when the research team did an angiogram after the study, they noticed that in 82% of participants, there was reversal of the blockages. Mm. So these are interventional studies, but somehow this information is not making its way into the clinic. And a large part of that is our medical education system that tends to generally emphasize pharmaceuticals or surgery, which are, of course, essential, but not enough time is given to nutrition and lifestyle changes, which can be just as powerful.
Dr. Shah, can you talk more about this? Because when you found out you had cancer, you wanted to learn more about diet. In fact, you decided to change your focus of research from immunotherapy to diet. And it seems like, I mean, this has been embraced by your institution and your colleagues. So can you talk about what that process was like, given that in so many cases, including my case of my loved one having cancer, not one doctor asking about food or nutrition, can you talk about what that process was like for you to really focus on food at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center?
Great. Yes. So I think that most oncologists, just to add, also have been trained in looking, and doctors as well, looking at the data from an interventional trial perspective, meaning that we do an intervention, like either feed patients or give a drug and see what the outcomes are. And those kind of trials in oncology are a bit more limited given the complexity to run them, but we're seeing a lot more of those. And that's part of why it's not translated into seeing this in the clinic. But we do see with all of these association studies and epidemiologic that we're seeing these outcomes that really now need to be studied in proper clinical trials. So I do face skepticism sometimes from doctors, on social media or other colleagues, but overall, I've mostly had a lot of support in terms of wanting to do this, and many people have felt like this is an important area that we should study. And within the research that I have focused on is we're looking at how a high-fiber, plant-based diet, the trial is called the Nutrivention Trial, looks at precancerous states in this type of blood cancer called multiple myeloma, and how it could maybe potentially delay progression to myeloma development. And I think because for this precancer state up until now, the standard of care has always been observation, or the standard practice where we tell patients there's nothing to do, just watch and wait until the cancer develops. I think it can be very unnerving for patients, even though everyone won't develop a cancer, still there is a proportion of those patients who will transition to a cancer. And so with this trial, we're providing patients an opportunity to really dive deep into a intervention where they're improving their lifestyle through dietary changes and see how that impacts their insulin resistance, their cholesterol. We saw a decline in weight for patients with an elevated BMI of 7%. And this is much quite significant compared to a lot of studies. And with that weight decline, we also saw an improvement in the microbiome, an improvement in insulin resistance, an improvement in LDL cholesterol, like Dr. Raman spoke about as well. So we're seeing all of these metabolic and microbiome and immune system changes, which we know will help delay cancer progression. And we had two patients that had a slowing of their cancer progression too in this study. So with that, we're trying to study this in bigger populations and larger studies, and we're working on that currently.
Today, we're joined by two doctors who are talking about the rise in cancer in the United States, what we can do to prevent cancer, what can people do who've been diagnosed. That is Dr. Uwe Shah, a myeloma specialist, assistant attending physician at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, a cancer treatment and research institution in Manhattan that is dedicated to ending cancer. Dr. Shah is a cancer survivor who now focuses on dietary interventions and dietary guidelines for cancer. Dr. Vinita Raman is clinic director of the Barnard Medical Center, which was established by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a nonprofit that promotes preventive medicine, especially good nutrition. Dr. Rahman is also a certified nutritionist and former internal medicine doctor at Kaiser Permanente, where she launched a plant-based weight loss program. If you have any questions or comments, if you have been affected by cancer, we'd love to hear from you. The fact of the matter, the numbers are pretty dire. There's a new study out by the National Cancer Institute that found Gen Xers, those born between 1965 and 1980, are projected to experience higher cancer rates than baby boomers. The lead author told NPR he was surprised that so many different types of cancer appear to be rising, like thyroid, kidney, rectal, colon. And he says this means cancer rates in the U.S. might remain high for decades. So what can be done to educate the public about this? What does the science say about the changes that we actually have the power to make? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Dr. Rahman, how should we be thinking about this? Because we don't really have any control over the air pollution that we inhale when we go outside. We just don't have control over that. I mean, especially if you're low income or, you know, someone of color who's living near these gas and oil facilities where they're inhaling all these toxins. Sadly, we don't have much control over PFAS. I was just reading that some PFAS, the forever chemicals, are now in toilet paper. I mean, these chemicals are just everywhere. So that's hard to control. But of course, we have to keep talking about it and raising awareness and putting the pressure on government to take take steps in banning these things. ProPublica just has a piece about the EPA finalizing new standards for cancer-causing chemicals. I mean, why is this taking so long? But what about the things that we, in many cases, do have control over? I mean, I definitely want to recognize that not everyone can eat organic. It's expensive. And people don't have access to healthy foods in many cases. And for a lot of people, it's really hard to change habits because so many people are addicted to processed foods. And we're not blaming people. It's just this is the way that our society it functions nowadays. So given all of that, Dr. Rahman, how should we be thinking about prevention?
Yeah, you know, such an important question, because I think everyone who's been diagnosed with cancer is in shock and they're thinking, what could I have done differently? How could I have prevented this? How can I prevent someone else from getting it? And similarly, cancer survivors are often thinking, what can I do to stay cancer free? And those of us who see others deal with it, we're wondering, what can we do to lower our own risk? And you're right, there are factors we can control, there are factors we cannot control. One of the factors that we control is something that we're exposed to 3 to 6, 7 times a day, and that's the food that we put on our plate. And it doesn't have to be expensive, and it doesn't have to be organic, and it doesn't have to come from a gourmet grocery store. It can be relatively inexpensive. You know, we've been talking a lot about this research study that just came out showing the rising rate of cancer. However, there's also been another research study that came out recently from Tufts showing it's sort of a report card on the American diet. And I think it's really fascinating to look at that. And when we see that the average American is not even consuming a single serving of fresh fruit a day, less than 2 servings of vegetables a day, and 0.1 servings of leafy green vegetables a day, and 16 teaspoons of added sugar. So this is under our control. We can control this. And, you know, it's really important for us to recognize that we can improve our nutrition profile so much, and that would go a long way. So adding more fruits, veggies, beans and legumes, whole grains like brown rice or quinoa. These can be simple substitutions that don't have to cost a lot. A pound of chickpeas is 99 cents, and that's enough to make four meals. So eating well doesn't have to cost much either.
I was just looking at a study. This is from the Harvard Gazette. Obesity and disease are rising with the consumption of ultra-processed foods. This is according to Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll continue with that question. I'd love to hear Dr. Shah's response also. Today on Your Call, we are talking about cancer. Cancer deaths are falling in the United States, which of course is really incredible news. The tragic news is that new cases are on the rise. 1.9 million in 2022, over 2 million last year, according to the American Cancer Society, and the National Cancer Institute says rates in the United States might remain high for decades. If you have any questions or comments, we would love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about cancer. What can we do to prevent cancer? What can we do to educate the public about all of the information that we're sharing today? If you have any questions or comments, if you've been affected by cancer or have questions about prevention, and really where we are right now, I mean, this is just unprecedented. The amount of chemicals we're exposed to, the amount of processed foods that people are eating. And again, it's not about blame at all. It's just so easy to buy all of these things. And we know we've done so many shows about industry really ensuring that people are addicted to these foods. So this didn't happen overnight. And again, it's not about blame. We just want to share the information to do whatever we can to get it out there and to reverse these disturbing trends. So if you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Dr. Vinita Raman is clinic director of the Barnard Medical Center, which was established by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a nonprofit that promotes preventive medicine. Dr. Raman is a certified nutritionist and former internal medicine doctor at Kaiser, where she launched a plant-based weight loss program. Dr. Uvi Shah is a myeloma specialist and assistant attending physician at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, a research institution in Manhattan that is dedicated to ending cancer. Dr. Shah is a cancer survivor who focuses on dietary interventions and dietary guidelines for cancer. So Dr. Shah, same question to you. Given that, you know, we don't have control over these chemicals, unfortunately, but in many cases, we do have control over our choices, our food choices, although that is also incredibly difficult for a lot of people. How do you think we should be thinking about all of this?
Dr. Raman gave us some really great points about it. I wanted to add a couple more things. So one is dietary fiber. There is a lot of studies and data showing that getting adequate dietary fiber is associated with a lower risk of cancer. For every 10 grams increase in fiber, about a 6%, 7% reduction in cancer risk, depending on which cancer you're looking at. There is something called the fiber gap, and this was in a study where they surveyed the general population and asked them, do you think you get enough dietary fiber in your diet? And 67% of the population actually said, yeah, we get enough fiber. But when they actually looked at the diets of this population, less than 5% got enough dietary fiber. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of disconnect, and this disconnect is called the fiber gap, where people think that they're getting enough, but they're probably aren't. So the majority of the U.S. population really doesn't get enough fiber, and the average fiber intake for the U.S. population is around 10 to 15 grams, where we want it to be really more than 25 to 30 grams, so double that. And when we think about one cup of beans, that has about 15 grams fiber and 15 grams of protein. So if we just add one cup to our diet every day, we're going to get to that fiber recommendation. Another thing with the ultra-processed foods
Dr. Shah, can I just jump in quickly?
Yes.
Just to elaborate on the fiber, I think this is so important. And because fiber is talked about, but I wanted to drill down. So you mentioned the beans, and I'm looking right now at the Cleveland Clinic, There's a list of 31 high fiber foods you should be eating. Just to go over a few of these, lentils are at the top, an amazing food and cheap. Split peas, black beans, pinto beans, artichoke hearts, kidney beans, chickpeas, chia seeds, raspberries, blackberries, barley, pears, almonds, oats, broccoli, quinoa. So, and avocados actually are high in fiber, 5 grams for half an avocado. I just wanted to give a couple specific examples.
That's really great. Actually, also to remember, fiber only comes in plant foods and mainly unprocessed plant foods. So if somebody's thinking like, where do I get my fiber from? It's going to come in the plant foods you eat, like whole grains, fruits, vegetables, beans, seeds, nuts.
Great. Thank you. And then you wanted to talk about processed foods.
Yeah, I want to talk about processed foods because processed meats, for example, is very clearly linked to an increased risk of cancer. So the IARC, or the International Agency on Research for Cancer, considers processed meats as a group 1 carcinogen and red meat as a group 2. So group 1 means definitely causes cancer, and group 2 means probably causes cancer. And so I think as we, as a population, as this processed meat consumption increases, that too is associated with an increased risk in general in the population too. And lastly, I just wanted to mention the American Institute of Cancer Research guidelines that we haven't talked about yet. But these are 10 cancer prevention guidelines, which basically distill down all the research that's available and say, what are the common themes of things that could prevent cancer or reduce risk? And out of those 10 things, 6 out of the 10 are actually around nutrition and the diet. And one of those 10 is eat a diet rich in whole grains, fruits, and vegetables. And then the other things are like avoiding alcohol and keeping a healthy BMI or body weight.
This is very important, Dr. Shah, because I've been reading a lot of studies about colorectal cancer, and it is on the rise, especially among young people. Now, one of the reasons is that so many more people are now getting colonoscopies, which is great news. And even at a younger age than 55, some are getting it in their 40s. But this is the information that you don't often hear when I hear stories about colorectal cancer. You talked about processed meats, and I'm reading now from the Fred Hutch Cancer Center. Colorectal cancer risk and red and processed meats. A large analysis shows high meat consumption bumps risk by as much as 40%. So can you talk more about this? Because it just doesn't get the attention it deserves.
Yes. I think that because often the absolute risk, meaning the true absolute risk with something like smoking, is much higher. So that's clearly talked about for cancers. But with red and processed meat, the absolute risk is not as high as smoking, but it is a very clear risk that's there. And so I think that, and because it's so widely eaten and utilized by most people, I think it is also a bias where it's not talked about as much from those point of views. But I think if we're thinking about things we can do to limit our risk of cancer, amongst those 10 guidelines, one of them is limit consumption of red and processed meat as well.
Dr. Rahman, do you have anything to add on this, given that it is so incredibly important as colorectal cancer increases?
Yeah, definitely. I do. And I also wanted to add something about ultra-processed foods that we've been talking about. They are a real problem. They're heavily marketed and they're designed to be addictive. They're loaded with added sugar, salt, and fat to lure us in, and then we want more. And one of the research studies showed that for children, two-thirds of their daily calories are coming from ultra-processed foods. So let's just think about that. These children will then grow into adults who are eating the same way, and it's no surprise then that we're seeing this rise in obesity and cancer. In terms of red meat, I think there may be many reasons why people don't. First of all, I think there's this information vacuum, this report that Dr. Shah talks about where processed meat is labeled as a group 1 carcinogen, red meat as a group 2 carcinogen. most people are not aware of it. People are aware of the connection between cigarettes and asbestos and cancer, but somehow we haven't really educated the public. So we need to do more. Maybe processed meat should come with a Surgeon General's warning, just like tobacco does, so that the public is aware. The other thing is that people often turn to red meat because they feel they need it for protein, or they need it for iron, or that it's an important source of nutrients. But they may not know that meat doesn't provide any fiber. As Dr. Shah said, fiber is only found in plants, and that, you know, red meat is associated with a higher risk of cancer, and that more importantly, they can get all the protein that they need from these high fiber foods like beans and legumes, which are packed full of protein.
I also wanted to mention, because I think the science and the data is so important, the research from the Fred Hutch Cancer Center in collaboration with USC found that two genetic mutations for those carrying them make eating red and processed meat even more hazardous. And if you want to read more about this, we have a link along with a number of other articles that we're discussing on today's show at yourcallradio.org. We have a number of callers on the line, so let's go to our callers. And again, today we're talking on Your Call about cancer. The rates are tragically on the rise. Luckily, the deaths are falling. But what can we do to reverse this disturbing trend and really get this information out, all based on science and research? Dr. Uri Shah is assistant attending physician at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She is a cancer survivor who now focuses on dietary interventions and dietary guidelines for cancer. Dr. Vinita Raman is clinic director of the Barnard Medical Center. She's a certified nutritionist and a former internal medicine doctor at Kaiser, where she launched a plant-based weight loss program. Why don't we go to a number of callers, and then we'll get Dr. Shah and Dr. Raman to respond. Let's go to Judy in San Francisco. And thank you all for waiting so patiently. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I wanted to remind people who live in San Francisco or on Treasure Island, that we have two very tragic laboratories, living laboratories, of pollution-caused cancer. Both of those places were, naval stations, and the shipyard, the Hunts Point, Bayview Hunters Point shipyard, would clean nuclear submarines there, and all this radioactive and all kinds of other chemical waste was dumped there. The Navy claimed it did a cleanup. It did a very inferior cleanup. Same going on at Treasure Island. And then, this company called Lennar is trying to build housing there. And, nobody is really doing the cleanup that's needed. If it can even be done, maybe housing shouldn't be built there. But the San Francisco Bayview paper really covers this well. It's been covering it for years. There are two reporters, one for each place, one for each site.
Judy, because we have so many other callers, I hate to cut you off, but I definitely would like to do shows about that so we can get into the details, because that is so important, talking about Treasure Island and Bayview Hunters Point. Those are on our list, and we'll be doing shows about that soon. So thank you so much for calling in, Judy. Let's go next to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello, thank you. I appreciate this program so much. I'm fortunate enough to have a farmer's market that I can go to and shop at, and I'm going to have to consider, even though I eat a low amount of red meat, I may even have to cut back on that. But I wanted to ask them a question about this. You go in any grocery store, and even if you buy organic, good food, unprocessed, you're going to buy stuff that's packaged in plastic. It's just everywhere, and you're going to buy, if you're lucky, you're going to get BPA-free cans that have the food in them, beans, etc. But I'd love to lead a campaign to get these grocery stores to change their policies and provide more vegetables, fresh vegetables, and to get away from these toxic chemicals. One last thing. when you're talking about cancer, you can't avoid the environmental exposures.
Right.
We're all exposed to, you know, vehicle exhaust, every kind of air pollution imaginable, and that's a contributing factor to cancer. So thanks.
Well, thank you so much, Greg. Such an important question, and we'll get a response in just a few minutes after a few more callers. Let's go next to Suzanne in Healdsburg. Hi, Suzanne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi, Rose. I love your show, and I have two people very close to me that have cancer. One won't eat anything because she doesn't want to gain weight, and she's had several colon cancers in 5 years. And the other one will not eat vegetables or fruit. A lot of processed food, a lot of meat. So what can I do to help in some way?
That's a very, very good question. And I think a lot of people are actually, we got an email from a listener who has a similar question. We'll get a response in just a minute. Thank you for calling in, Suzanne. Let's go next to Posey in San Francisco. Hi, Posey.
Hi, thanks so much. Just to start, I have had close friends and family who have had cancer. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about, you had mentioned about, you know, both the cost and about food, you know, what people say about, you know, eating healthy, and you're right, it doesn't have to cost a ton. But the most important thing is people eat, like, that highly processed food and stuff because, you know, they're used to it and it tastes good. And what's really important is that people, I grew up, my mom is an amazing cook. I have to say I'm a great cook. And if people know, but people don't know how to make highly flavored food. At a Christmas party, although I grew up eating meat, I grew up eating other things as well. We had a really varied diet. Recently, I've stopped eating meat because I've become very aware of the of factory farming. But I made like these, and there were some hardcore meat eaters over, and I made like these little stuffed mushroom caps. The mushrooms cost almost nothing, and I used Impossible Meat, and I highly spiced it. Because if you highly spice things, and not with very much salt, a tiny pinch with herbs and hot peppers, and if you highly spice food, it'll taste a lot better. And I even think like cooking classes in high school. That might sound silly, but people have to know how to make delicious food. And yes, it doesn't have to cost a ton. And also, you have to start somewhere. You can't, like, obviously the pollutants are horrible, but try not to stress too much over it. And yes, like, you know, go to Safeway and buy a big bag of lentils and some herbs and garlic and hot peppers and make a yummy lentil soup.
Yeah, that's a great tip, Posey. And I've been thinking about this a lot because anytime we do shows like this, people say, can you bring on chefs or cookbook authors who can talk about actually how to make good food? And we'll definitely do that. Why don't we focus on that question and then Suzanne's question? And again, sorry to hear about your friends, Suzanne. She said one won't eat because she doesn't want to gain weight. The other one doesn't eat many fruits and vegetables. We have a few emails from listeners who say, I try to encourage loved ones to eat healthier, but it's incredibly difficult. So what about that, Dr. Shaw?
That's a great question. And I've also had some personal experiences around that with family members or friends who really would not want to be eating this way or eat enough plants. And I think sometimes by just leading by example and them seeing how well you're doing is a way for them to understand and maybe say, okay, maybe I'll try this because you are. And sometimes when we tell people too much, like keep doing this, then they actually go the opposite in rebellion or may not want to do it. So I think we have to meet people where they are and think about what are the plant foods that they maybe like and maybe buy more of those, and then kind of slowly transition where we don't force everything on them all at once. I think that plant-based meats, while they are processed, and I would not recommend them on a daily basis for the long term, I think they're a good way to transition from meat if somebody wanted to cut down or reduce it and increase their plant food intake. The swap meat study, which was actually done in California at Stanford, looked at basically the participants ate exactly the same amount of true animal products, or they had plant-based versions of the same thing. So if it was chicken versus plant-based chicken, and they looked at, after they did this for a few weeks, they looked at things like cholesterol and hemoglobin A1C, and they saw actually that the cholesterol was lower in the participants who were eating the plant-based meat options, because even if it's a plant-based meat, it will have some fiber in it because it's made from plants, so there is going to be a little bit of dietary fiber. I still don't recommend it long-term and all the time because these are processed foods after all, but I think that as a short-term transition, they could be quite valuable.
Dr. Rahman, what would you add? How can we best reach our loved ones?
You know, I agree with what Dr. Shah said, leading by example. And one trick that can be helpful is ask them what they want to eat. So let's say if someone wants, you know, their favorite food is mac and cheese with bacon bits. Maybe make them a whole wheat macaroni with a silken tofu based cheesy sauce. And then you can get these red bean bacon bits and sprinkle them on top. Or if they like burgers, then make veggie burgers and just kind of serve it and see. But like Dr. Shah said, we can't push people too much. The more we push, the more resistant they might feel. It becomes a power struggle. So it's best just to offer the food in a neutral way and say, hey, I made this. It's available if you'd like it. And, you know, try that. Or something like a pizza bar or taco bar you can set up at home. So people pick their own toppings and load it up with healthy toppings and see how they do.
A related question from Mike. The challenge of poor eating is not only about the cost of food and changing eating habits. A huge factor, especially among low-income people who work two or three jobs and do not have enough childcare, is the time and energy it takes to prepare three meals a day for you and your family. I find myself grabbing a bag of pretzels, white flour coming from a plastic bag that likely contains PFAS. Mike says, keep up the fight. Thank you, Mike. It's a great question. Dr. Shah, what about that?
It's a really great question, and it is a challenge for many people, and I won't deny that. But I think that if it is really important to you, there are ways around it, such as making enough food on the weekends and then storing it and freezing it so that you're eating in batches and you don't have to cook every day three meals a day. So as somebody does this more often, they learn to prep foods in advance. So for instance, you could make a curry or make beans and basically freeze different boxes. So that's enough for four or five meals across the week, and you don't have to make it fresh each time. For instance, frozen fruits and vegetables are equally, if not more, nutritious than fresh fruits and vegetables because they are frozen as soon as they're picked off the plants. And so I don't think there is a downside to freezing the food and then eating it when you're ready. And the last thing I wanted to say is that taste buds do adapt and change. And I've seen this in our clinical trials too, where somebody may have been on a Western diet all their life. And as they transition to the high fiber plant foods on our Nutrivention trials, they eventually say like, okay, and now I'm craving these foods instead of the Western junk foods because they're now used to it and they feel good on them. And even once we stop the intervention, patients continue to do this on their own because they start seeing the benefits. So I think sometimes making these changes reinforces itself and helps you continue beyond.
Dr. Rahman, do you have anything to add? We have just a couple minutes left.
Yeah, you know, it can be problematic, but remember fruits are always a quick snack like bananas with peanut butter. It's easy. It doesn't have to cost much, or apple slices. And like Dr. Shah said, batch cook, freeze, and you can even freeze your own fresh fruit before it goes bad, like frozen grapes make a great snack, or even boiled chickpeas seasoned with some herbs and spices can be a great snack.
Final thoughts from both of you. I mean, in addition to cancer, chronic diseases are on the rise in this country. What else can be done, Dr. Shah, to educate the public around these issues to ensure that we really tackle these disturbing trends?
Great point. I think one is really educating doctors in training through medical schools, residencies, fellowships, so that this becomes mainstream. And if a patient goes to multiple doctors and they're giving them the same advice, I think the patient's more likely to follow it because they feel like they're getting consistent advice compared to if only one person, one doctor tells them and the other one says, oh, it doesn't matter or things. But I think that as we bring more awareness, such as your radio show or the trials we're doing at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, I think all of these things add up. And patients themselves and individuals, as you've had good experiences, share it with your friends and family so that you can influence others and make a difference.
Just briefly, Dr. Shah, is nutrition being taught in today's medical schools?
I think it's improved. There are, like, for instance, the New York University has a culinary medicine course, which I had the opportunity to teach a class in once. And there is a lot of education. The American College of Lifestyle Medicine does education for doctors. And the New York City Mayor Adams has provided this education free in partnership with the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. So we're offering it to all doctors at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, for instance. So I think there is a lot of change coming in this space, which is really encouraging to see. And I'm really happy to see that and be a part of it. But I think everything takes a little bit of time, but I don't think we need to wait until then. We can start being advocates for change ourselves.
Dr. Rahman, final thoughts? We have about a minute left.
Yeah, really important for people to know that, you know, often people think they're predestined to develop cancer. It's genetic. There's nothing they can do. And I really want our listeners to know that's not necessarily true. Genes are not our destiny. What we eat plays such an important role in all aspects of our health, including our risk for cancer. So this one, we can do a lot on our own. We don't have to wait for policy to change or medical education to change. Like Dr. Shah said, we can start acting now, today.
Dr. Vinita Rahman is clinic director of the Barnard Medical Center, which was established by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. She's a certified nutritionist and former internal medicine doctor at Kaiser, where she launched a plant-based weight loss program. Dr. Uvi Shah is assistant attending physician at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in Manhattan that is dedicated to ending cancer. Dr. Shah is a cancer survivor who now focuses on dietary interventions and dietary guidelines for cancer. Dr. Rahman and Dr. Shah, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
And you can find information and links to all of the studies we discussed today at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.